NHPR.com. I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. One year ago tomorrow, on April 15th, a cherished New England tradition, the Boston Marathon, was attacked. Here's an early report from that day.
Breaking news out of Boston. This afternoon, with tens of thousands of runners and spectators gathered for the annual Boston Marathon, a pair of explosions tore into the crowd. They happened near the finish line. Details are still sketchy. According to tweets from the Boston Police Department, 22 people are injured and 2 have been killed.
Soon after, the toll rose as the blasts took 3 lives and injured well over 200 people, among them several Granite Staters who were seriously hurt. Now, 1 year later, these victims have a lot on their minds and their hearts as they reflect on what happened and how they've processed it over the past 12 months. But the bombings hit a much wider circle than those who were physically affected. For those who participate in the marathon, who love the race and the holiday feeling it brings to Boston, this is a sober anniversary. Still, many expect a spirit of resilience and even celebration on Marathon Day next week, with near-record numbers of runners and spectators taking part. Today in The Exchange, New Hampshire looks back at the one-year anniversary of the Boston Marathon bombings, and let's hear from you. Your own memories of that day, whether you were there or not, and what do you think has changed? 1-800-892-6477 is The Exchange number. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Again, the number, 1-800-892-6477. We have 3 guests with us in studio. Karen Broussard is here. She's a Nashua resident who was seriously injured during the Boston Marathon bombing, along with her husband and daughter. They were there cheering on a friend near the finish line. Karen, really good of you to come in. Thank you very much.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Sam Shields. He was running his first Boston Marathon last year. He was stopped just 0.5 mile from the finish line when the bombs went off. His family witnessed the blasts, and there was some confusion at that time. Sam is running again this year to finish the race. And Sam, it's nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is our own Keith Shields, executive producer for NHPR's Exchange. Keith will be running his 16th consecutive Boston Marathon this year. He had finished the race when the bombs went off, but had lots of friends who were close to the finish line. Keith, we should also say, no relation to Sam Shields. No. Complete coincidence. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Laura.
Well, and Keith, there are marathons everywhere in every big city, but runners will tell you that Boston is special. How come?
Well, for a myriad of reasons. I mean, first of all, it's the history. It is the oldest continuously running marathon. Basically, the first marathon happened at the Athens Olympics in 1896, and many of the people who participated in that from America were actually from the Boston Athletic Association. So they came back, and they started a race very much like the ones that they ran in the Olympics. And that, so it's the oldest one. It's one that's just riddled with stories, just really historic stories. There's, you know, Johnny Kelly, who's run it 66 times. There are the Wellesley girls who show up and scream for you at mile, 12. There's Dick and Rick Hoyt, the father who pushes the son in the wheelchair for over 25 years. Heartbreak Hill. It's one of the very few that you have to qualify for. So, for a runner who is a distance runner who really, wants to run marathons, this is like your goal. When you've qualified for Boston, it's sort of in a way you've arrived, and it's like your Mecca, it's your Super Bowl, it's your World Series. And then as much as it's great for the running and the runners, it is for the spectators, too. I mean, I run a lot of marathons. It's the craziest thing where you have people from mile 1 to mile 26 cheering you, going crazy. People who make it as much of a tradition to go out there and cheer on the runners as much as it is for the runners to run the race.
So much for the reputation of Bostonians as stuffy people who don't let their emotions show, right?
Absolutely not. I mean, I always tell people, if you want to know what it's like to be like a rock star, go run the Boston Marathon. Put something on your chest that says your name or where you're from. And people, they don't know you, and they're going to go cheer you. They're going to encourage you. They're going to push you in. And that last 2 miles, especially, when the crowds get out of Fenway and they're out there 3, 4, 5 deep, it's like a wall of sound that's pushing you through the finish line.
Yeah, and the spectators were among those most seriously injured. And we'll definitely talk about that. So let's get to the hard stuff, folks. And Karen, I will turn to you first. Just what do you remember about the day before the marathon? You know, getting ready and thinking about going down there with your husband and daughter.
It was actually very exciting for us. It was our first marathon. Our friend who was running, it was her first marathon. So we were all pretty excited. And the night before, I had made signs to hold up, you know, and it was a gorgeous day, very electric. We met up with friends and we did lunch and the girls went shopping. And, you know, we were just all having such a great time. Got notification that she was getting close and said, okay, let's head over to the finish line. And it's a lot of fun because you're as excited for everybody coming through as you are waiting for your own friend to come through or your own family member. It was just great to see people when they recognized their family member and how excited they were. And it was just an electric morning. It was just such a great, fun time to be there.
Well, and it's such an accomplishment, as Keith said. So, yeah. Sam, what do you remember?
Same thing. You know, being over towards Hopkinton, I texted my mom that morning. I said, I can't believe how many people are here. This is incredible. There's helicopters flying all over the place. It's just like you said, it's like the Super Bowl. I mean, same thing. Just so much anticipation. I couldn't wait to get running. I was nervous, but in the end, I was just like, I'm just running. That's all it is. I'm just running 26 miles, which at the time made me nervous. But once you get going, it's fun and it's exciting. The atmosphere is incredible.
Now, you had a little bit of a different situation that maybe added to your nerves, Sam. You were running as what's called a bandit.
I was.
You were not officially registered.
I was a little worried I wouldn't even be able to run the race, but, you know, in the history of the BAA, they've always allowed bandits. This year, it's a little different, which is totally understandable. But running as a bandit last year, it was the same experience. So once we got going, I felt like one of the official runners.
Yeah. Keith, go ahead. Your thoughts on just that preparation. This was going to be your 16th or 15th marathon, Boston.
I love the Boston Marathon. It's my favorite weekend of the year. I look forward to it every year. You know, it's after months of training with my friends. You know, went to the expo, which is where you get your number, and there's tons of vendors that will, you know, you can geek out. I go to the pasta party, the official pasta party, which is the Sunday, the day before the race. I went there once again with a friend, and we just had a great time. And that morning, you know, as Karen said, it was a beautiful day. It was a great day for the runners because it was in the 50s. There was a tailwind. We chartered a bus. We came out to the finish line. There was a lot of stories and remembrances and laughs and nervous energy because you're about to run 26 miles. But it was just a normal, magical day that it seems to be every Patriots Day out there in Hopkinton.
Yeah, it's like Christmas for runners.
It really is. Yeah, yeah. It's magical. It's like a Disneyland feeling.
The phone number for you to join us, by the way, is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Today in the exchange, Granite Staters who participated in last year's Boston Marathon when those bombs went off. Join us with their memories, recollections, thoughts about the past year. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. All right, so let's turn a corner, and it's a tough corner to turn. Karen, you were down at the finish line, still waiting for your friend, all excited, as you said, and then what?
And then in a blink of an eye, it just was changed to a battlefield. It was, it's funny because in talking to my husband and my daughter, we all have such different memories of that time, that exact time. Just the overwhelming sound. It was deafening. I mean, literally deafening. We could see that we were trying to communicate and couldn't hear a single thing. But for me, I got a tunnel vision. I don't know whether it was just a protection that my brain didn't allow me to see the chaos around me. I just kind of focused in on my husband, who I knew was very badly injured, and my daughter and her girlfriend was with her. So for me, it was just find my group, find my four, and move away. Try and get – we didn't know where we were going, but we just knew we didn't want to be where we were. I remember seeing the glass all on the ground. The air was gray. But I don't recall seeing anyone around us, even our friends who were standing, you know, shoulder to shoulder with us. I didn't see anybody. And, you know, it was just an immediate response of move away, get my husband down to the ground and raise his leg because he had an artery torn, and he was bleeding pretty profusely, and we knew that he was in some serious danger. And we just got him as far away from the spot as we could get and tried to tie a tourniquet onto him. And it was just kind of a hectic few minutes, but within minutes, there were people there trying to help us. A young man who was a runner, he had just gone over the finish line, and he came back immediately and kind of just took charge, just a 23-year-old kid, and he was so poised and took his shirt off and with his bib and tied it around my husband's leg and held his leg together. My daughter was trying to hold my husband's leg together. She was quite, you know, devastated and frightened, and that was kind of, for me, the toughest thing, to watch your daughter suffering with that kind of fear. And then a second man came, and he was a well-seasoned soldier, and he was just phenomenal. He took charge of my daughter, got her calm, allowed her to kind of release my husband so that they could work with him. And again, just within minutes, there was firefighters and police officers, and they had my husband up in a wheelchair and off, just went running. I didn't even realize I was injured, had no idea that I had had injuries until I tried to keep up with the wheelchair, and I knew I had hurt my ankle. Didn't really even register that it was going to be anything bad until I got into the tent and they got my husband situated enough so that they could put him in an ambulance. And they then were saying, you need to sit, you need to sit. And that's when I realized I had injuries.
And pretty serious injuries.
Yeah. I had a piece of pipe sticking out of my ankle. And I had a piece of the device was in my right leg. So both of my legs were affected. And I was bleeding pretty badly as well. So it was amazing how prepared they were to help us and get us out for immediate help to the hospital.
And amazing how your own instincts took over, too. We'll hear your stories, Sam and Keith, after a short break. And you can join us, too, with your own memories, thoughts about that day and what has happened since. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. NHPR reaches listeners all over New Hampshire. If you own or operate a business, you can get your message to the entire state by simply becoming an NHPR underwriter. Visit the support page at nhpr.org to find out more about our many underwriting opportunities. More in Granite State's reflections 1 year after the Boston Marathon bombings on The Exchange. Then at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, mass violence in public places and our sense of security. New Hampshire weather, partly to mostly sunny today, windy and warm, highs upper 60s to mid-70s. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from Seacoast Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, orthopedics and team physicians for the UNH Wildcats, providing evaluations and surgical interventions for athletic injuries, sosmed.org. And the Turner Group of Concord, architects, engineers, and building scientists designing energy-efficient, sustainable buildings for a healthy environment. Online at hlturner.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, Granite Staters share memories of the Boston Marathon bombings and how they've processed this event in the 12 months since then. The anniversary of the bombings is tomorrow. The marathon itself is next Monday. You can join us with your own memories, thoughts, concerns, questions, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. With me in studio is Karen Brassard. We heard her story of being injured at the finish line, her and her husband and daughter. Also with us, Sam Shields. He was running his first Boston Marathon last year. And Keith Shields, no relation, our executive producer here on The Exchange. He will be running his 16th consecutive Boston Marathon this year. And Sam Shields, I did want to go to you next. Your own stories of that day, a very different story from Karen's. You were running, but your family were spectators.
Yep, they were directly across from the second explosion. So I was about mile 24, and I was stopped for water with a friend of mine. He was running with me, and we heard some kids say, two explosions on Boylston, and We didn't know. We didn't know what he meant by that. We just kept running. We everyone was still cheering. The cops were even cheering us on. I mean, there was no sign of that. We get about mile 25, and the sirens are just picking up. There's so many sirens, and that's what sticks with me from that day is the sirens. And the sirens really picked up, and we it's tough to talk.
Oh, I know. It's hard, Sam. Yeah. Do you want to take a breath?
No, I'm okay.
And we'll go to Keith? Or?
It's okay. So the sirens really picked up, and we were told to stop running right on the overpass in Comm Ave, and we're just really confused. Then the word that there was two bombs at the explosion, and last thing I told my family that day was go as close to the finish line as you can. So,
oof. So yeah. You're thinking, oh, boy.
Yeah. So I had no idea what was going on. The phones weren't working. Nothing was going through. So just confusion, chaos. That's what really stuck with me from that day. And took about an hour and a half for me to get a text through saying sitco sign. That's all I could get through. My phone was 7% battery left. All I could say was sitco sign because that was the one landmark that me and my family were not from Boston. We're from New Hampshire, so we don't really know the area as well as Bostonians do. So we were like, you know what, sitco sign, let's try to meet there. And it was about 2 hours later when I finally met up with my family. And I didn't realize how close they were until we got up, and I ended up calling a friend who lived down in Boston. We went up to his apartment. It was about 6 hours later until we got home.
Yeah, yeah.
But when we got up to his apartment, it was about that's the first time we really saw the damage because the news was on, and we were fortunate to get out of the city that day unscathed.
Yeah, and your stomach is in knots during those 2 hours
absolutely.
While you're waiting for the sitco sign. I'm imagining that reunion at the sitco sign.
Oh, it was
too.
Emotional.
Yeah,
very emotional.
Yeah, okay, so go ahead, Keith, right? You had crossed the finish line. You were already home, sort of, changing.
Yeah, so there's three waves of the Boston Marathon because the size of the marathon has gotten so much larger. There's one at 10, one at 10:20, and one at 10:40, and I left at 10. So I ran a 3:14 that day. I got in about 1:15, and I decided to go home. You know, it was that normal thing of just responding to friendly texts and Facebook comments, and I took a shower, and I got out of the shower, and all of a sudden I'm getting all these calls and texts saying, are you okay? And somebody called me and told me to turn on the television, and I did, and I sort of saw what was unfolding there. I mean, I did the math very quickly. Most of my friends were in the third wave that left at 10:40. They were four-hour marathoners, so I knew that many of them were basically right there at the finish line. You know, these are people I've known for 15 years, and It was just a blur the rest of the day of just a lot of social media. Have you heard from this person? Have you heard from this person? I found out later that I had friends right at the finish line. I had a friend of mine who was working at the finish line right when it happened, and somebody whose family was standing right where the first explosion happened. She crossed the finish line 3 minutes before the explosions happened. They just happened to walk away. I had a friend who was standing right by the explosions too. You know, an hour later, he might have been a victim. So it was just playing all this crazy, just trying to make sure that everyone was okay and accountable for the rest
of the
day.
Well, we were calling you, too,
yep.
on the exchange. That was our first thought, obviously. So, wow. All right. So joining us now is another Granite Stater who was also there, although in a different capacity than our guests in studio. Andy Shockhead is with us. He's a longtime road race announcer who writes a running column for the Union Leader. Andy was reporting for the Union Leader, was close to the finish line when the bombs went off. By the way, he'll be covering the event again this year. Andy, thanks for making time out. I know you're busy today.
Well, I know it's a very special time, what I call the most anticipated road race in American history. And I know a lot of very emotional, as we just heard from Sam, very emotional time as we think back to a year ago.
Right. So you were covering the race last year. What do you remember, Andy?
Well, I'll tell you, my day for the last few years has been interesting. I always start in Hopkinton. I help out the marathon doing some announcing, and then as soon as as Keith said, the last wave leaves around 10:40, 10:45, I drive to the finish line, and the media is allowed to stand about 100, 150 yards behind the finish line in front of the medical tent. And I got there, and my task is to interview the top New Hampshire male and female and write about it for the Union Leader. And then I just hang out and try to greet as many runners as I can. And as Keith will say, it's pretty wild to see, hundreds of runners coming at you trying to pick them out. And I stood there for a while, and I was about to go home, but a friend of mine was waiting for his granddaughter. So I said, okay, I'll wait for her, and then I'll head home. So I was looking up from behind the finish line towards the finish line. I saw the first explosion, and my first reaction was it sounded like a cannon that sometimes is used at some sight lines. And I thought, why are they firing a cannon at the finish line? And then I quickly thought maybe it was a transformer that exploded because of all the electronic equipment. And then I saw the second bomb further up the road, and then just, you know, everybody yelling and screaming. It took me about a minute to realize, since I was the only one there from the union leader, even though I was not a photographer or a news person, that I better take some photos as much as I can, get as close as I can to take photos for the union leader. So I ran towards the finish line and just, you know, tried to take some photos. And, you know, what really struck me was, you know, this is the type of scene you see on the evening news, you know, when you hear about things like this happening in the Middle East or somewhere else. And I realized, thought to myself, this is not the evening news. This is happening right in front of me. It was quite a horrible scene to see unfold in front of me.
Yeah, a running columnist usually doesn't expect to have taking photos of devastation as part of his or her job.
No, and that's what I said, I'm all they've got at the union leader. They didn't send a reporter. I'm not a reporter. I'll just do the best I can. And, you know, again, just saw some things I wish I hadn't seen.
Yeah. Well, you're going to be covering the race again this year, Andy. How is it going to be different for you as in that reporter role first? And then I'll ask you about your announcing.
Well, it's kind of interesting because the two in some ways are tied together. Because the race is so large, they will not be leaving Hopkinton until about 11:30 or so. So my task, as always, I will start the day as an announcer out in Hopkinton. Then I've got to get in the car and drive to the finish line. But I suspect that this year I will not be able to get to the finish line in time to talk to the top New Hampshire male or female. So I just want to be there to greet as many people as I can. I've told people that I know they can expect the biggest hugs that they've ever gotten when I see them at the finish line. So I'm just going to go to the finish line and just greet as many runners as I can into the finish.
So at that Hopkinton starting line, Andy, where you'll be working again as an announcer, what kind of instructions have you been given this year about maybe having to do things differently?
I haven't been given instructions yet. I expect to. I know that one of the announcements that I can be expected to make is for people not to leave any bags unattended. In fact, they're going to the runners are not going to be allowed to bring any bags out to Hopkinton. So I imagine they're going to be instructing me to make sure that I keep repeating that, to telling runners to not to have any bags, and just reminding spectators not to bring any bags or leave any bags unattended. And I also believe that they're going to be telling me, just people, to keep their eyes open for anything suspicious.
Yeah. Well, and last question for you, Andy. What does New Hampshire's participation look like this year? Again, you're covering those wonderful New Hampshire runners.
Well, usually we get about 300 to 350 participants. This year we have over 500 participants. You know, one of the things that's interesting about Boston is, you know, it sometimes is referred to as the Super Bowl of road races in America. And we're very lucky because we're so close to it. I don't think any other state outside of Massachusetts makes a bigger deal about the Boston Marathon than the state of New Hampshire. There's a running club based out of Nashville called the Gate City Strategy. They actually have a formal ceremony where they give out an award to the top male and top New Hampshire female at Boston. And they name it after a guy named Henri Renault, who back in 1909 won the Boston Marathon while living in Nashville. He's the only New Hampshire runner to ever win Boston. So the Gate City Striders named an award after him. I don't think any other state does that, has an actual formal ceremony where they honor the top male and female from that state.
Well, Andy, thank you so much for being with us, and good luck on race day.
Yeah, and thank you. And I just want to wish all the New Hampshire folks the best luck. And as I said, when I see them at the finish line, they can expect one of the biggest hugs they've ever gotten.
All right. Take care, Andy.
Thank you.
That's Andy Shockett. Again, he's a longtime road race announcer. He writes a running column for the Union Leader. He'll be covering the event again this year, which is on Monday. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us with your questions, thoughts, recollections of the Boston Marathon bombings 1 year ago tomorrow. We're sitting down with a panel of Granite Staters who were there. They're offering their memories, and we'll take your thoughts as well at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. You can post a comment there if you want. You know, folks, just a few questions coming out of what Andy said. Keith, lots of people, near record numbers, going down to run, going down to spectate. We're not quite sure if it's a record number this year, but there's going to be a lot more people than there were last year. How does that work logistically, just dealing with all those more people?
Well, the first thing is that they have four waves this year instead of three. So at one point in time, when I first started running, everybody left in a big mass. And now, you know, there's a 10 o'clock start, 10:25, and 11 o'clock, and 11:25. And it's real difficult because those roads in the beginning of the race out in Hopkinton and Ashland, they're not large roads. They're kind of they're country roads. And the roads don't really get big until you get to Framingham and you get into Newton and all that. So, you know, I think it's one of those things. The waves are for the fastest runners first and the sort of slower runners, you know, in the second and third and fourth waves. So that's one of the ways that they accommodate that. You know, they added 9,000 runners this year to the field. So generally,
9,000.
Yeah, there's 27,000, and that was, you know, other than the 100th anniversary, that was a record. They added 9,000 more this year. The first thing that they did was they offered a number to any person who did not cross the finish line. There was about 5,000 of those people. I think 4,000 actually accepted that. After that, they basically just knew that there was lots and lots of people. Every person who was injured, like Karen, got two numbers. And Karen can tell you what she did with hers, but some decided to run, some decided to give them away. And then they just basically expanded the field, and there was a cutoff. So you need a Boston qualifier to run the race. And
means you need to be able to run a marathon in a certain time.
In a certain time. And now, and what they had to do was they had to cut it off between about 2 minutes and 38 seconds, I think it was. So if you ran a Boston qualifier slower than under 2 minutes and 38 seconds of your qualifying time, you had to get a number some other way.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So let's talk about the new people. And you did get, as Keith said, Karen, you and your husband got offered two numbers to run it yourselves.
That's correct. And unfortunately, we're not capable of doing that.
Physically, because of your injuries.
Correct. Wow. But the two gentlemen who came back to help my husband were runners last year. And we offered them the bibs. Rob, the younger man, he actually was a bandit last year. So he was thrilled to be able to get his own bib. And the other gentleman, last year, he was a blind runner's escort. So he and his wife both took bibs from us this year. So those three are going to be running on our bibs. And we're thrilled to be able to do that for them. With the bibs that were offered to us, there was no qualifying time required. There were a lot of – they waived the fees. The BAA waived the fees so they didn't have to pay for the bibs. And there was no requirement for charitable donations, which a lot of people are able to run, but they have a requirement to reach so much in a charity in order to get the bib. And through the BAA for the victims, they waived all of those things. So it was really nice to be able to provide that to them.
And you are – going down to watch. What's that going to be like for you to see those people sort of running in your name?
Yeah, the plan is to go. I'm incredibly proud of these guys. They're like family to us now. We have spent so much time with them, you know, since the marathon. So I definitely would love to be there to see them come across and to be there to root them on. But it's an unknown right now. We don't know how we're going to feel. They're expecting a million people to be, you know, lining the course. And I just don't really know what we're going to feel like in that kind of crowd, being there on that day, what kind of emotions are going to come up. The goal is to go there and kind of recapture that happy excitement that we had prior to the event. The One Fund has made a room available to all of us.
One Fund, again, is what, Karen?
The One Fund is the organization that was developed immediately after the event, where people made donations, and they have been in touch with us and made all kinds of things available, support groups available, and there are a lot of events that they have organized for us and made donations to us. And they have a site available on Boylston Street that the victims can go to if we begin to feel overwhelmed, so that we can still view the race but not be enveloped in that major crowd. So we're going to go there. The goal is to be there and be able to see them physically cross the line. But that room is available in case we should start to get, you know, anxiety or overwhelmed.
Sure. And I want to ask you a little bit later about just processing this whole thing, you know, not just physically, but emotionally, because clearly, you know, there's some things you have to work through there. But you too, Sam, you know, the idea that there's a lot of logistics in the coming year, you've got a different story. You're going to be running officially, and you kind of had to compete for that spot, didn't you?
Yes, I did. So at first, there was a brief point where I was like, you know what, I was a half mile short of finishing my first marathon, and I just wanted to get back and finish the race. Then I started feeling a sense of guilt, almost like, my family was there, and we got out okay, and there's people that didn't that day. So
yeah, and three people died, including a little boy.
Yeah, exactly. And so the One Fund actually created a team. They have 50 bib numbers, and I applied. There was 400 applications, and I was lucky enough to be one of the 50 chosen. And so now I'm raising money. I got a bib number. I'm raising money for the One Fund, and it's the most incredible experience of my life. The people that are on the team, I've met victims, and it's been incredible. So I'll be there. I'll be there that day, and I'll be running for the One Fund.
Now there was some competition for that bib, and you kind of wrote your story, and,
right?
And you thought that might have helped to put you over the top.
Yeah, I put my story down on words, and you know, our mentor for the team said it was the toughest thing he's ever had to do was read those 400 applications, and somehow, luckily, mine stood out. So I'll be there, and I'm really excited.
What's it going to mean to you to cross that finish line?
Boy, I don't know. I think about it every time I take a run, and I think that it'll be emotional, and it's something that I really can't describe until it happens.
All right. Again, I want to invite you to join us with your questions and comments. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. I just want to acknowledge an email from Donald that came in. He says, the heroic actions of first aid volunteers who saved many lives with their quick action when seconds counted is a Boston Marathon story that needs to be told. Absolutely right, Donald. He goes on to say, these are being overlooked by the mainstream media. It's hard to find and interview these anonymous first aiders who were first on the scene. Many of these volunteers spent their own time to get the many hours of basic first aid training to be prepared to provide help when needed. Also, the groups that do the training, the Red Cross, Heart Association, Boys and Girls Scouts. And you're absolutely right, Donald. Those folks were critical on the scene in those all important first minutes, and their contributions should not be overlooked. So thanks for the email, Don. You can email us as well, exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, a year after the Boston Marathon bombing, mass violence in public places and our sense of security. Then a new look at the 2006 Duke University lacrosse scandal and the lessons we did not learn. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from the Bank of New Hampshire Pavilion at Meadowbrook, presenting Steely Dan Saturday, August 30th. Tickets available April 18th online at banknhpavilion.com. And Goodwill Industries of Northern New England, seeking solutions that work and creating sustainable communities where nothing goes to waste, not a shirt, not a shoe, not a person. GoodwillNNE.org. 940, this is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, Granite Staters reflect 1 year after the Boston Marathon bombings. On April 15th, two bombs exploded close to the finish line of one of the world's most prestigious races, including many from New Hampshire who were either running or cheering or working at the race. We're talking with a roundtable of Granite Staters about their memories of that day, their thoughts over the past year, and how they've processed this whole thing. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-877-7777. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. You can post a comment there. Keith Shields is with us, our own executive producer. He'll be running his 16th consecutive Boston Marathon this year. Sam Shields is also here, no relation. He was running his first Boston Marathon last year. And Karen Broussard is also here. She's a Nashua resident who was seriously injured during the bombings, along with her husband and daughter. One more time, that exchange number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, just want to look back at the past 12 months. We talked about what happened that day. We talked a little bit about how you're feeling about the upcoming day. What about the 12 months in between, Karen? What's that physical recovery, first of all, been like for you and your husband? Your injuries were pretty severe.
Yeah, physically it was a long road, and it was, a lot of patience. Your mind feels like your body should be able to do whatever it did prior, and our bodies just don't work the way they did prior to the 15th. So that was tough to deal with physically and emotionally, it giving up some of that freedom of running your own body. And there was some anger in that.
Absolutely.
You know? So there have been a whole lot of waves of emotion that have gone with the physicality. We each had to have several surgeries. Even after being released from the hospital, I ended up having to have another surgery done once I was home recovering. So it was a long road, and we really only started dealing with the emotional side of this whole process months and months after, because you're so caught up and focused on making the physical healing and doing what you need to do with that, and physical therapy and not knowing exactly how much of your body you're going to get back. We still, both my husband and I, still have areas that are numb, that we have no feeling, no sensation in our feet, loss of range of motion. So physically we're still coping and working on those issues. Emotionally, it was a lot longer, a lot harder road. And coming back to the first anniversary, a lot of it comes back. You know, we just felt like we were getting back to a normal kind of process. And now we're back to the first event. And it just brings everything back. And it's a lot harder. You know, the last few weeks have been a lot more stressful.
Yeah, I've heard that when you're a victim of trauma, that one-year anniversary is especially a difficult hurdle you have to get over, which is why I triply appreciate you coming in,
it's
Karen,
almost,
and working through this with
it's
us.
It's almost harder because, you know, while you're in it, you're thrown into something you have no control over. Your body and your mind just does what it needs to do. And a year later, you're remembering and you're processing and you're, you know, focusing. And it's almost harder to go through a year later.
And Sam and Keith, I know you guys are processing too in your own way. And, you know, Keith, Sam mentioned something, runner's guilt, because a lot of the people who were most severely injured, and I think those who were killed, they were spectators. They were not runners.
Exactly. I mean, runners are a real tight-knit community. I mean, it's one of the very few sports where it's not you versus me, my team versus your team. I mean, it's a very supportive sport. There's no rivalries in running or anything like that. So, in the weeks after what happened, I mean, for me as a journalist, I sort of had to cover this. And I remember that following weekend, I was in my greenhouse and I just started crying, you know. And I can't tell you the number of times I've been out on runs by myself and started tearing up, you know, especially over the past 4 months. I have some of my friends who are at the finish line suffered from a guilt about the bomb exploding. And not running towards the bomb, but running away from, you know, for safety. And why couldn't they have done more? And why? I mean, they really had a hard time with it this year. Even for people like me, who definitely was way far away from any harm when it happened. You know, you think about, you know, that what makes the Boston Marathon so great are the people who come out to support us, people that strangers, you know, like Karen, you know, what she said, it's as much fun cheering for a stranger as it is, you know, these people who took the day to come out and support me, and most of those people who were hurt, you know, I can't help but think, but did Karen or did Sam's family or Krista Campbell, Lindsay Liu or Martin Richard, who were killed that day, did they, you know, yell out in support of me? And so you just...
Wow, there's a real connection there, huh?
There is, and it's sort of like, why them, the people who just make this such a positive event? And so, you know, I had an opportunity with my running club to, there's a group called 415 Strong that, you know, those numbers that they get, some of them have chosen to run the marathon this year. And we got to meet them at Spalding Rehab in Charlestown. And we sat down with them and we gave them training tips as sort of veteran runners. And it was this sort of mutual, you know, awe thing. You know, they were kind of amazed that we had run 20, 30 marathons. And we were just amazed that they were not ambulatory a year ago and now having the courage to go out and run. And
especially this race.
It was therapeutic. Yeah. You want to do something, you know, and sometimes even just more than raise money. You just want to do something to... You know, to help people and just, you know, appreciate, you know, all that they do, just being making the marathon great and then being hurt by such a senseless act.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was a senseless act. And I know you've been following the trials, Karen. I want to ask you about that. But you too, Sam, you know, just the idea that Keith put it so well, that these people are there. They make the day what it is. And they were the ones who were hurt. I'm also interested in what Keith said about, you know, hey, it's human instinct. You hear an explosion. A lot of us would run away. Why would you run toward danger?
Exactly. And my family, there was five of them there that day, and my sister was 11. My brother was 12. Their priority was getting out of there, getting everyone out of there. Had we been there alone, me and my sister, maybe my older sister, and we would have maybe, you know, run over. But I wasn't even near the explosions, and it's tough to say what you would do in that situation. But I think my family made the right call with running away and with the young kids and being directly across. I mean, my sister Abby, she was on the fence, just like Martin Richard was, just on the other side of the street. So it could have been us if we were on the other side, and that's where the guilt comes from. But I think they made the right call trying to get out of there.
How are the younger members of your family especially processing this? I mean, I've got kids around that age. That's a lot for them to go through.
Yeah, they had a tough time that week. They didn't sleep very well. Even my mom was waking up hearing loud bangs, and they had a real tough time. I'm proud of them with how they've done since then. I think that they've come a long way, and it's an experience that not many kids their age, anyone really, goes through. So.
No, and it's something you don't want any child to go through.
No, it's terrible.
I mean, no one, child or not.
Exactly, but they've done well.
Are they coming down to see you?
They'll all be there. My dad will be there this year, too. He wasn't last year, but they're attending the Red Sox game, I think, and then they're going to make their way. So they're going to get the experience. I don't know where they'll stand. They're still thinking about that, but they'll be there, and they're excited, and I'm proud of them for that.
Yeah. Karen, you look like you want to jump in there.
I was just going to say that somebody pretty immediately afterwards asked me if we were disappointed in people who ran away. And I was appalled by the question because you don't even have time to process a thought. It's just an instinct. And how could I ever, you know, be upset by somebody who has a need to leave the area for whatever their personal reason is? There was absolutely no anxiety, no animosity in any of it. People were so amazingly good from the moment it happened. It really kind of negated that 2 minutes of terror was so overshadowed by all of the positivity that you don't even give that a second thought, you know. And talking about the runner's guilt, I think everybody there had some moment of guilt. My girlfriend, who was right beside me, lost both of her legs that day.
Oh, my goodness.
So I had the guilt of, you know, being relatively unharmed, and her body was devastated. And her husband was the person who chose to stop where we stopped. And he, you know, he worried about that. My daughter called her girlfriend from school and said, come and hang out with us. She felt badly about that.
Why
the
did
runner,
I call her?
Yeah. The runner who was running. They wouldn't have been there had I not been running. So there's just, I mean, it's just a natural instinct to have that first emotion of guilt. And then afterwards, as you process and you think, geez, it's just an unavoidable event.
Something... So your friend felt guilty for encouraging you to come down and cheer her on.
Correct.
If you hadn't come down to support me, then you wouldn't have been
there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Here's an email that just came in from Monica. She says, my son was a senior at Keene State College working at the finish line as an athletic trainer. He was close enough to be splattered, as you can see on his credentials. He had blood in the treads of his boots. Evan had run the marathon and had been looking forward to working the event as the perfect ending to his senior year at Keene State College. He did manage to get a text out to us that he was all right. We knew he was at the line. It was a long and emotional day for all of us at home waiting for him to return. He assisted with the wounded until relieved by Boston EMS. Monica says he will be back at the med tent this year as a volunteer athletic trainer. Wow. Monica, thank you so much for that. And that's the spirit that we're hearing about and seeing, Keith, right? I mean, just give us a sense of that. I mean, I hate to sound cliche, but that Boston strong. I mean, more people running than ever, almost more spectators than ever. You know, Monica's son is going down. I mean, people are saying, we're here. We're coming back.
Well, one of the things, I mean, that I actually was kind of watching videos and things like this about it. I mean, it's Boston's this city of kind of rebels and revolters and sort of something that something like this is not going to get them down. And so, you know, yeah, I mean, I think people don't want some senseless act by two people to bring down something that makes this you know, city so magical. I mean, that's one of the things that makes Boston so magical. This is the Boston Marathon. You know, I mean, it's weird for me. I love the Boston Marathon. I love it so much. I take part. I have a jacket every year. I have a shirt every year. And, you know, I have to be there. I want to run it every year, but I have to be there this year. And yet, obviously, there's parts of me that, you know, are just want it to be over in a weird way. And it's kind of sad that I want something that I just, you know, I love so much to be over. How does one process going to a major race the year after a terrorist attack on it? There's no experience in that. So I have no idea, you know, will I be emotional? Will it be at the starting line? Will it be at the finish line? Will it be at the Newton Hills? You know, will I be happy at times? I have no clue. And I sort of gave up trying to figure that out a while ago. And I'm going to show up and, you know, and just sort of just take it in.
Yeah, kind of what Karen said, that one-year hump is really hard.
Mm-hmm. It
is.
Something
you got to get through.
It is. And so many of my friends, and again, running is so supportive. And that's one of the great things about this year is that, you know, we have run together. We've talked about it. We've done special runs to the finish line. We've done special runs up the top of a big hill and said a quiet prayer for those who were injured and hurt and killed. So, you know, it's been very kind of to have people around you, you know, who have experienced the same thing. It really is therapeutic.
And probably a good thing to have run the course at least once so you're not seeing it for
right.
the first time.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Well, as we talk about, you know, approaching this day and kind of processing it, there's a commemoration for the victims tomorrow, which is the actual anniversary, which is why we called you folks in today, because I think you're going down, Karen, tomorrow. Is that right?
Correct. My whole family will be going down, and we are meeting up with Ron's two saviors. They're going to be attending with us as well. So we're all going in as a unit. And I think it's really, like you said, therapeutic for us. We're going to be there with all of the people who were affected with us that day, the runners and the first responders. You know, I worried as much about them and their emotional well-being as I did about our own, because nobody should have to see what they had to see. Nobody should have had to deal with those kinds of injuries that they dealt with on a sidewalk on the side of the road. So it's been, you know, we've had several opportunities to spend time together, all of the injured and some of the first responders, and it's just been such an amazingly rewarding time to spend together, to see how well everybody is handling it and to talk about all of the shared emotions that we went through, and you listen to them and you go, wow, that's exactly what I said and that's exactly how I felt.
And somebody who can relate.
It really helps to keep that healing going.
Sam, are you going to the event or have you been to the Boston Public Library has an exhibit memorializing the event as well that's got a lot of coverage. Have you participated in any of that?
I've not been to the library. I plan on doing that this weekend down at the expo, but I am going to go to the event tomorrow. I'm meeting the One Fund charity team down at Marathon Sports. Marathon Sports sponsors us. So it's I'm going with our team members, and it's a great team because everyone has a different story from that day. So everyone's affected in their own personal way. So we're going to all go over to the tribute tomorrow, and it'll be something pretty special.
What do you think these tributes mean, Sam, to obviously the victims like Karen, but also for people like you who just, you know, deeply care about this event?
I think it's awesome to be in the same atmosphere as these people. You see the very people that we're raising money for. Sometimes we get so fixated on the money that we're raising, on ways to raise the money, that we forget who this money is going towards. So it's great to be here with Karen, and it's going to be great being in that environment tomorrow with all those people from last year.
Yeah. Keith, have you been to the Boston Public Library?
No, I intend to go this weekend as well.
Yeah. I wonder if that helps to process a little bit before race day.
Yeah, it does. You know, I have to say that, you know, I'm not sure how much I'm going to really kind of watch the news and all that tomorrow. You know, there's been a lot of processing this year, and I want to sort of take part, and I want to, you know, kind of go to these things, but you know, there's a lot of motion in this, and sometimes you just need a little kind of step away from it. So, you know, I'm going to do some of that, but I'm not going to kind of do too much, I think.
Karen, very quickly, you've been following the trial of the accused bomber, who is still alive. I'm guessing every victim comes at this differently. Why is this important to you to follow this?
People do come to it differently, including within my own family. I want to be involved. I want to see. I want to be there. And
yeah,
my husband wants
not,
nothing
right?
to do with it. He just wants to have faith that that the process is going to do what it needs to be doing. But I want to be there. I want him to see that we are all here, you know.
Well, good luck tomorrow, whether you go or not, whether you stay on the finish line or not, whether you end up in that special place or not. Karen, thank you so much for sharing your story with us, and good luck on your recovery.
Thank you so much.
And Sam and Keith, good luck with the race.
Thank you.
Right?
Thank
Let's
you
just make
much.
It a race. And
absolutely.
26 miles is nothing to sneeze at. So good luck to both of you. Really
you.
Appreciate you sharing
Thanks.
Your time. Again, that's Keith Shields, our executive producer here at NHPR's Exchange. He's going to be running his 16th consecutive Boston Marathon this year. Sam Shields, he ran his first marathon last year. He's raising money for the Victims Fund. He'll be running on their behalf this year. And Karen Broussard, she's a Nashua resident who, as we heard, was seriously injured along with her husband and daughter in the race last year. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is James Pouliot. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Canoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Canoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, remembering Rwanda. It's been two decades since the 100-day mass slaughter aimed at the country's minority Tutsi population, and now Rwanda is starting to see success in economic growth and public health. We'll talk about how far the country has come, the struggles it still faces, as well as the ongoing soul-searching by Rwandans and the international community. Send us your thoughts by email or Facebook, and join us for The Exchange, tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
Diane Rehm Show next at 10 o'clock on New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from you, our listeners. Support also comes to us from Comcast Business, continuously investing to keep customers ahead of the technology curve. Comcast Business is built for business. More at business.comcast.com. And Dr. Nanda of Nashua offering minimally intrusive alternatives for those with sleep apnea who are CPAP intolerant. More information available at centerfordentalsleepmedicine.org.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN Keene, 90.7.
WEVC Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. As this year's Boston Marathon approaches, city officials are finalizing new security measures for the race. Despite the memory of last year's bombing near the finish line, thousands are expected to attend the event next week. Every day seems to be